Recordings have started. You may begin.
Thank you very much. So welcome to this call number 36 of the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN's Accountability on June the 9th, 2015. And today we'll be, of course, using the Adobe Connect Room attendance list for the roll call. And as usual, I'd like to call at this point for all those, or if any, are not in the Adobe Connect Room, but are, in fact, through the phone bridge to state their name to be added to the roll call. So is there anyone in the phone bridge that is not in the Adobe Connect Room at this point? Okay, so hearing no one, then the roll call will be the attendance list in the Adobe Connect Room. We have a couple of topologies, which I think staff will be taking note from. And as usual, we remind you of I remind you to mute your lines if you're not speaking. We have just had a little bit of noise in the background, so everyone will appreciate and thank you if you mute your lines if you're not speaking. So we remind you of filing your statement of interests. This is essential to our group since it is an internal accountability measure for the group, so we can't afford not to be accountable and have so many SOIs that have not been filled so far. So staff has been sending some reminders to those who haven't filed their SOI so far, and since we haven't had any reply from many of them, those who haven't filed their SOI so far will be moved to observer status. They will no longer be considered either members or participants, but will be moved to observer status. So if you want to...
For transparency, it was Sebastian comments, Steve.
Yes, Sebastian?
You are back, Leon? Good.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. So, as I was saying, those who haven't filled in their statement of interest, they will be moved to observer status. So, with no further delay, I'd like to go into the next agenda item, and for that I will turn to my co-chair, Thomas Ricker. Thomas.
Thank you very much, Leon. Hello, everybody. As you will have noted in the agenda, what we mentioned under agenda item 2 is actually quite brief. It's just tech review of the public comments received on the draft proposal. And in fact, there's a little bit more to it. And I would like to refresh your memory on how we plan to go about with this. First of all, as Jordan had already indicated on the mailing list in response to Alan's question, what we're going to do today is just going to be an initial run-through by the whole group, which has been asked for by some members of this group who were concerned that if we just take the reports and allocate them to the sub-teams, that the whole group doesn't really have a chance to discuss and weigh in. And therefore, for everyone to get an overview of where we are, what we received, and who's going to do what, we're going to go through the public report comment tool, public comment report tool. Sorry, it's quite early in the morning in my time zone. And then allocate tasks to the work parties to further work on those. There is a table which is going to be uploaded in the Adobe in a moment, which specifies unambiguously which of the chapters in our report, i.e. which questions that we've asked the community are going to be dealt with by which working party. So if you look at this document that hopefully has uploaded in all of your Adobe Connect rooms, you will see that the initial four chapters, i.e. the revised mission commitments and core values, fundamental bylaws, independent review panel enhancement, and reconsideration process enhancement, are under the purview of work party number two. I think you do have scroll control. So if you move to the next page, you will see the items allocated to the other work party, to work party one, and that would be the mechanisms to empower the community, with the respective powers they're under, incorporating the affirmation of commitments into the ICANN bylaws, and suggested stress tests. Although we should note that we had, a special group working on stress tests, and we will certainly involve them when these items are being worked on. And lastly, if you scroll down to the third page, you see the tasks that are allocated to the whole CCWG in the absence of special allocation to one of the work parties, and that is the public comment input framework and items for consideration work stream 2. So what you can expect to happen today is that we will go through the report jointly and as briefly as we can, and then we will try to do the first step in our approach to determine whether we have support from the community, concerns from the community, whether there is confusion, or whether there are diverging views stemming from community input on the various questions that we have posed to the community. You will remember that, I think it was me doing a little presentation on how we can go about with it. So we would slice all the responses into manageable pieces and try to do our consensus building in an iterative fashion by actually looking at individual items and try to reach consensus on the uncontroversial ones and work more and more on those that are far from having reached consensus, i.e. where we find ourselves with a situation we call divergent in the scheme of full consensus or consensus, rough consensus, then we would have strong support with significant opposition and divergence. You know, that's the scale of consensus that we find in our charter. So that is, this table is going to be mirrored in the report. So what we did prior to, or what staff thankfully did prior to sending out the report to you, is actually look at the individual comments we received and allocate them to the specific questions. So instead of having comment by an individual or a group as such that has been put into the public comment review tool, the comment received has been sliced, and the portions of the report belonging to a specific question have been put into the specific or the respective sections of the overall report. So we have a pre-selection done, not in order of quality, or there has been no judgment has been made, but you find all the answers we received for, let's say, question A, question one, in the question one section. And I see that there is a question from Athena, and Athena, please do ask your question.
Hello, all. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, thank you very much for all this this work you did, this is indeed very helpful to make sure that each comment really fits into a particular question and is allocated to working groups for further to working parties for further consideration. With the ASO representatives already described how we are going to engage with our numbers community. And this was done via the RIR meetings and via our mailing lists. The last RIR meeting this period was finalized last week. We do have comments expressed verbally in the discussions that have taken place at these RIR meetings, and we do have some comments that were sent directly to our RIR mailing lists. And our community feels much more comfortable with expressing themselves through our own mailing list. So we still have to deliver all these comments to the CCWG, of course. And I would like you to know that we still have some bits to insert into this work, some comments from our numbers community. I would like your guidance on how would that be, how we can do this in the best way for transparency purposes, and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Athena. First of all, thank you very much for reaching out to your community, which you did as we expected. I think we do understand and sympathize with the fact that you have your own work approach to collect feedback from your community. So I would suggest that you provide input as soon as you can. And you will have noted that for the other language versions, we have extended the public comment period. So ideally, we would have received your feedback so that it can be incorporated into our report by the time when we finalize incorporating the other language contributions that we get. Because then that would allow for us to actually close the document well before the Buenos Aires meeting and allow for the group to actually thoroughly analyze all the comments received. In which format that you wish to do that, I think that we would leave that pretty much up to you, but it would be good for you, good if you could send your contributions, either to the list or to us co-chairs, and we will make sure that the results are incorporated into the report and shared with the whole list and the wider community. Great. So unless there are further questions with respect to the approach for this call, I would like to hand over to Mathieu, who is going to speak to the next subject on the agenda.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And hello, everyone. Mathieu Vey speaking. The first item of discussion, we are going to get into this public comment review tool. But before we jump question by question, we thought it would be good to have a couple of more general discussion points about the how the input we got looks like. And so if maybe staff, can you put in the Adobe Room the public comment review tool, the first page? But I think the first aspect, the first question we need to raise is looking at the contributors, which are on page one of this document. So we've received a number of contributions. I think the row number is close to 60. It's very close to what the CWG received in terms of number of comments. And I think the question we need to ask ourselves upfront is whether the distribution of contributors is already saying something, or is it sufficiently covering the various stakeholders we were aiming at? Is there anything lacking? Looking at this approximately 60 comments, some of the comments actually come from constituencies within the GNSO. We have comments from advisory committees as well. A comment from ESSAC was submitted last night. We can note a number, significant number of governments providing direct input. I'm thinking of Brazil, Spain, France, a significant number of CCTLDs as well, NAMINET, AUDA, NORID, and others, .NZ. There is a strong participation of U.S. private sector organizations through, for instance, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We have the business constituency, but that's a constituency, obviously. The International Trademark Association is a broader association than U.S.-based only. We have a comment from Google, from the private sector as well. But if I was to give a personal assessment on the private sector contribution, I'd say it's quite focused on U.S.-led private sector, and there's not much contribution from other parts of the world private sector. For instance, the European private sector does not provide any comment that I could note. We've had comments from four of our advisors. We've had comment, if we look outside of the ICANN community or people who regularly participate into ICANN, I think we can note a comment from the Internet Architecture Board, the IAB, a couple of comments from stakeholders from India, which are, at least to my knowledge, not regular participants to ICANN public comment processes. And I did note a missing part from the numbering community, but Athena explained that this was on the way. And so if I look at the contributors, that would be my initial reflections. And I would say we have a good participation, good level of participation, rather focused on the regular participants into ICANN public comments. So external observers might say the outreach was not sufficient, but that's always the case. But that's the initial perception that I would share, and I would now encourage everyone to share their own perceptions about the distribution of contributors and what conclusions or indications we may take from that. And I see Sebastian is volunteering for the first question. Sebastian.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. I just wanted to raise the point that as we just get the translation of the document in various languages, we can hope that some non-English-speaking country and participants will be more willing to send comments now. And I hope that the lack of participation of some part of the world or some constituency will be balanced with the next comments we will. And as a matter of just a little question, it's is it supposed to be by alphabetical order or by importance or by I have some trouble to understand how it was done. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian. I don't know what you refer to in terms of order. there seems to be a kind
A2,
of...
A2, it's after AF.
Oh, I see. So there might have been a mistake, and it's certainly a conspiracy to have put Australia's domain name administrator at the top because they have red hair.
I agree with you. Thank you.
Any other question on the distribution of contributors? No? I see Avery's having stability issues with the AC. I mean, I suppose it's the AC room and not an advisory committee. Is that okay? So to me, it seems quite stable, so it's probably a local issue. Moving to another overview we can have, which would be to look at basically what parts of the report drew the most comments. I think that my first general impressions would be that, of course, we have general comments from almost everyone, introductions and so on. But then the topics that come very often into comments are the mechanisms to empower the community and the unincorporated associations. That's not a surprise for anyone, I guess, in this group. There were a very significant number of inputs regarding the IRP, including some very well-constructed suggestions of enhancement. There is debate, and we'll get to that later, I guess, on the composition of the empowered community mechanism, how the votes are located. So that's not a surprise, because we've had debate within our group as well. Quite a number of contributions did refer either in favor or against the introduction of a fundamental bylaw about whether ICANN's headquarters should be based in the U.S. A number of contributions as well, including our advisors, but also a number of others, were calling for greater focus on ASO-AC accountability, diversity, and so on. And the debate about private in the mission, the mention of either a private sector-led organization or the multi-stakeholder model is one of the debates that found an echo in many contributions. Just looking broadly at the document, those are the items that apparently are drawing most comments. And to me, it feels like this is very much a reflection of the debates we've had within our group, which is good news, because that means that our group did anticipate well where the community discussions would take place. Before we dive into the various sections, are there any other comments from... overall comments before we go into the various sections? Okay. So let's now move to the next sections of the document. In the general comments, I'll turn to Leon for that section, and we'll rotate from co-chair to co-chair on that section. Leon?
Thank you very much. This is Matthew. And in the first section that classifies or groups the different general comments on the proposal, there are, of course, many comments. We can see there are a total of 53 general comments on the proposal. And I'd like to, of course, review most of them. And we have comments from Richard Hill, and he's telling us that he feels that this is a step in the right direction, but it suffers from reinventing the wheel. And, of course, he does many other comments and reminds us of some documents from the Internet Ad Hoc group. Jan Schulte, our advisor, also has made some comments. He joins many other, also congratulating the achievement. Congratulating the group on the achievements. And then comes the Australia domain name administrator, and they raise many concerns that have been widely discussed in the list, and they conclude saying that they strongly recommend that the CCWG and the ICANN community return to the fundamental principles identified as part of the preliminary stages of the CCWG's work and abandon the need for legal enforceability as a fundamental tenet of the accountability review and attempt to arrive at a solution that delivers acceptable levels of accountability and community empowerment. I think this is a point that we have widely discussed and will continue to discuss, of course. I think that this is some point that we need to have a consensus on whether we want to have enforceability on the rights that we're trying to provide the community with, or if we're willing to sacrifice enforceability for other means. Then we have some comments from Denmark, and I can highlight that they acknowledge that in light of the fact that the CWG stewardship transition proposal is dependent on community powers, this dependency must not be compromised. So this is somehow linked to the previous comment from the Australian domain administrator with regards to enforceability. Let's remember that most, if not all, the stress tests that have been run by the stress test working party rely, of course, on enforceability. And if we don't have that, then, the landscape changes quite significantly. So they of course, also welcome the decision by the NTIA to transition the stewardship of the IANA functions. And they also acknowledge that our proposal focuses on enhancing IANA's accountability, and they feel that the work done so far does contribute to enhancing IANA's accountability. Then we have some other comments by I don't recall the initials for WC, William Curry. That's William Curry. And he states that we're doing, or the CCWG accountability proposal is doing an excellent job on creating an empowered community. And he acknowledges that by tightening up the principles, commitments, and core values in ICANN bylaws, the proposal makes clear what the standards against which the poet is to be held accountable are clear enough. And he also does some other comments, and he feels that we're missing a space in which the community, as accountability forum, can hold the board as accountable actor. He refers to the public forum so far, and he also provides a way forward with different steps. And I don't know if we should go into the details, as of course the different working parties will take care of diving into the details of the comments received, but he does provide some steps forward. Then we have some other comment that, of course, endorses the comments from John Archulte. And this gentleman, which is whose initials are NM, and that is, I don't recall the name, but initials are NM, and he feels that we need to be more specific in our proposal, and we need to have some specifics about that is Nelmino. I think he had Nelmino. We need to have some specifics about making sure that we take specific steps to make sure everything they do, and by they, he means, of course, board and staff, they do everything that the advisory groups do, and is widely disseminated as possible. And he feels that it is important that transparency is not just offered, but is actually implemented. Then we have another comment, which reflects that or states that so far our draft document is focused only on the board community relation, and for this this is proposing that we should have a deeper look or a wider look into the relationship not only with the board but also with management and staff, and suggests that we of course deep dive into providing more details on how this relationship would function and how these two actors would be held accountable to the ICANN community. Then we have a comment by APRALU, the African Regional at Large organization, and it's this comment is supportive of the CCWG and also finds that the report needs to be further worked to find the best ways to empower the community, and wants to avoid ICANN having the risk of being weakened or losing its independence and its inclusiveness in the multi-stakeholder model nature. Then we have some comments from the Argentinian government. They will continue, of course, to participate in the IANA transition process, and the discussion about mechanisms for guaranteeing transparency and accountability. They recommend that the transition is conducted thoughtfully and with focus on maintaining the security and stability of the Internet. And, of course, they encourage participation to try and get the work done by September 2015, which is, of course, an ambitious date, as we know. And they expect that the process of globalization in ICANN speeds up, and this will hopefully lead to a truly international global organization. Then we have some other comments from the government of India, if I'm not mistaken. And they state that ICANN, as the current IANA operator, must demonstrate accountability in its approach. They also ask that subsequent to the INF transition, irrespective of ICANN's role and the Bureau's involvement with operational aspects of the INF functions. ICANN must have improved, robust accountability and transparency mechanism, and they demand or they ask for stronger accountability mechanisms as a paramount importance, specifically in terms of operations relating to naming policy development and GTLDs. And they ask that ICANN must be clear and transparent, particularly about its structure, mission, operations, staff, elections, collaboration, decision-making processes, plans, and budget, finance, and earnings. We then have some more comments from DCAT, and they remind us that ICANN has faced many questions in the past, relating especially to the accountability of the organization, and they ask that, or they come to the conclusion that, therefore, ICANN must allow an independent and separate accountability and transparency body to be created to manage the issues that arise from actions or inactions of the board or staff and any other contractor assigned specific duties in the day-to-day running, and that such accountability mechanisms need to touch on all spheres of ICANN, including ICANN's budget, of course. He also says that the proposal should be set to reduce the number of PDPs and proposals to a certain minimum, and that this will enable the committee to properly comment or respond diligently to the proposals. The number of days allocated for comments must also be increased to ensure thorough in-depth research, and I think that this is something we've already considered, because our second public comment will be held by a period of 40 days. Then we have some comments from AFNIC, and they are truly supportive of the work we're doing. And they end their comment with a statement on the community empowerment proposal. And they think that it shows what is currently missing in ICANN to make this organization a truly multi-stakeholder one. And that they stress that without the powers given to the community, ICANN is more in a representative democracy model, and not even because all board members are not elected. Then we have a comment from NORID, which is a registry, and they stress that they are supportive of the work that we're doing, and they are aware of the openness in which the process has been conducted, and that we have carried in such a short time frame. And they are supportive, of course, of most of the principles outlined, but they reserve the right to further comment, since they haven't got the resources to go into details. Then we have some comments from the government of Germany, and Germany supports the multi-stakeholder approach inherent in the CEWG's working methods, and they remind us of the German position paper on guidelines and recommendations for action for the INF stewardship transition, dated March 26th. And they are initially supportive of the work that the CCWG so far has developed. Then we have comments from DP and DK, which are two gentlemen, David Post and Daniel Kell. And they formulate, of course, different comments, but I'd like to highlight that they strongly endorse the four critical goals that have been identified by the working group. And these are, of course, restating ICANN's mission, commitments, and core values, and placing those into the bylaws. Then establishing certain bylaws as fundamental bylaws that cannot be altered by the ICANN board actions unilaterally, but over which stakeholders have prior approval rights, then creating a formal membership structure for ICANN, along with provisions assigned to give the stakeholder members greater influence on board decisions, and fourth, enhancing and strengthening ICANN's independent review process. As I said, this is a quite lengthy comment, and I think that to what I just highlighted is the most relevant point, although they do contribute with several other comments. Then we have some other comment by IA, and that is stating that once the plan is accepted, this, of course, should be by the NTIA, ICANN must implement the bylaw changes in full prior to the U.S. government terminating the IANA contract. So this, of course, is with regards to World Stream 1. Then we have other comments by RB. This is, you can see this comment on page 6 and number 17, comment number 17. And this person does different comments on the advisors and the need to define under which jurisdiction ICANN would be incorporated. And it is considered to be a key starting point, as the jurisdiction will ultimately define the law that applies, and incorporation would imply registering bylaws, etc. And also has some impact with the external authority that ultimately defines the legitimacy and legality of the whole operation. Then he makes some other comments that it should be reminded that the NTIA asked for transfer of oversight to the global multi-stakeholder community, and most of the external advisors to the group shared the notion that this requires some form of internationally agreed legal incorporation and accountability to an external group that can somehow represent the whole of humanity, as stated in this comment. And he says that we were told this would be unrealistic, and he cites some document for which is, of course, dated for May of 2015 for a full comment. And then we have the comment from the French government, and they state that they comprehend that temporary U.S. jurisdiction over ICANN is necessary for purpose of stress testing the CCWG accountability final proposal over a limited period of time. And they state that the CCWG accountability final proposal should be transposable on an international legal framework, which they ultimately consider to be the only neutral legal framework suited for ICANN. So this also has to do with, I believe, the call for extension on the time frame by the NTIA. So I think that going through each of the comments will be quite time consuming. So if you have had the chance to go through the document reviewing the comments, we could begin commenting on or flagging some non-supporting statements or substantive input. And I think maybe Matthew, you could flag some comments or non-supportive statements in the document so far.
Thanks, Leon. I think we're trying to achieve two things here, which are difficult. There was a concern that was raised before this call that substantive work should start with a CCWG overall review and not be tasked to subgroups until there's been a discussion at the group level. And yet what we can see and is that we can go through everything at the same time without some form of prep work being done. So what I think could be a workable approach for this call, which would probably help us get a better view of where people stand with our initial proposals, would be on a section-by-section basis to just look at whether there are clearer non-supportive statements, whether there are some substantive issues that are being raised, and we could just flag them. But I would suggest we adopt a slightly more interactive approach where but where we just introduce each item as co-chairs, and the ones in the rooms, you've probably skimmed through the various inputs, and we each share our perceptions of the various sections. So if I was to do that for the general comments, I would say that most of the general comments are supportive of the approach. There are some exceptions. Exceptions include an input from .NA Ebrard, claiming that the whole process is a violation of the charter. And a couple of contributions, including by one of our advisors, Roberto Bisio, who basically would have liked our group to move to an international organization framework rather than the approach that we take, that we've been taking. Apart from that, in general, the accountability framework, the four building blocks, there are comments that ask for improvements, comments that are very supportive, but I think my personal assessment would be the four building blocks get some form of rough consensus. And I think that's the kind of statement we could try and discuss now for a few minutes before going to the next section. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Next on the queue, I have Jonathan Suk. Jonathan?
Hi, it's Jonathan Zook for the record. I don't know how to apply this recommendation to this call, but it seems to me that what we need to do is kind of surface out of this document the questions of facts that are that have been raised so that they can be dealt with in a factual way, potentially with the help of our legal advisors and others. And then questions of prioritization and comments for improvement. I think any effort at summary runs a risk of overgeneralizing people's contribution, which you don't want to do. But I think that we need to get to the idea of the kinds of comments that people are making and list who's associated with them, as opposed to organizing everything by the people making the comments, so that we can kind of get a sense, as you just discussed, of what the weight of the comments is on the one hand, but also just get to a functional list of criticisms, suggested improvements, and suggested alternative models, which I think will fall out of this list over time, but that feels like the work that we ought to subdivide or something like that, or get help with from staff with, et cetera, before going through this in such a linear fashion. I just feel like we're not absorbing the material that way.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Next, I have Thomas Rugut. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Leon. And before we move to the next point, which is going to be the methodology, I think what we can and should do as a group maybe is to discuss some of the very general principles that we heard about from the contributors. So I think it's important for us to state the level of concerns there is, and Mathieu just did that, the level of support there is. So Mathieu mentioned that we seem to have a rough consensus on the four building blocks. I've only seen one contribution asking for a fifth building block, that which would be staff, but the staff topic and how accountable staff would be is asked in other segments as well. So I think, you know, unless there are colleagues in this group that have a strong view against confirming that we have consensus on the four building blocks, that would be a topic that we could put into the bucket of, okay, this is something that we can do a consensus call for. Likewise, what we see in this first chapter, as well as in the second chapter, that there are multiple comments asking for the community powers to be enforceable. So I think that's something that we can clearly identify for our group as a subject that needs further elaboration and discussion. Also, the reminder that what we're coming up with needs to be easy to understand. That's also something where we as a group can acknowledge, unless there's objection, that we take good note of that and put that into the comment and actions to be taken box in the public comment review tool. As far as questions go, you know, we have some questions that we received with the public comments. We also have some very concrete suggestions, which more look like the wordsmithing part. That's something that we definitely need to allocate to the work parties, in this case, work party one, to take a deeper look at. But if you look at the general comment section, you know, I think the good news is that we have a lot of support, so we seem to be on the right track, we seem to have these a few topics that are coming up over and over again, and that is, you know, questions about the membership model, and there we can and should acknowledge that we have more work to do in that regard. I mentioned the subject of enforceability, but then there's also the role of staff. And I think that, you know, these are the high-level aspects that we should try to confirm and nail down and get the group's views on.
Thank you, Thomas. Next in the queue, I have Tavus. Tavus, could you please take the floor?
Good day to everyone. Thank you very much for all the comments, explanations. This was very helpful for people who have not had time to read these comments. A good brief. Thank you very much. Have I missed something in the general comment relating to the approach of membership model and designator model? If I have missed, I will look at that again. If not, perhaps it would be good to also have a subcategory relating to comments received regarding membership model and designator model, including the UA. The second question, not question, comment is that with respect to the categories that you have, perhaps it would be good that we create another subcategory. Let us take one example, a recall of the board. Comments received in favor. Comments received against. Those comments received in favor, perhaps with or without any improvement suggestions. because there might be comment in favor of the recall of the board, but they proposed some improvement to the proposals or the initial proposal of CWG. That would help to further analyze the situations. And my next question now is that how we should tackle these issues. There is a lot of comments, and how are we going to summarize this, preparing ourselves for the second proposals for the second public comments. Just in parentheses, Matthew mentioned that there is a good participation. I see there is imbalance in the participation in sending comments. There are considerable amount of comments for one or two particular area, and there are no comments from many other areas, and so on and so forth. I don't want to go to details, but I see that we should not count the number of comments. We should count the number of the communities or countries or areas that made the comment. Still, I see the outreach is not what we expected. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. As Thomas described at the beginning of our call, the different comments will be mapped for the different working parties to work upon, and that way we can we will be able to, of course, incorporate them to our document and refine our proposal for the second public comment period. And, of course, the different suggestions that you have made will be taken into account. And I would thank you for your comments. And with that, I would like to turn to my co-chair, Thomas Rickert, for the comments on methodology. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Leon. I'm now looking at the methodology-related comments that we received starting on page 13 of our report. And I think we can't go through all the reports in glorious detail. But as I mentioned during my previous intervention, there are some general themes that we can see. And I would like to briefly discuss those with you. But first, and before I do so, I sense that there is a lot of support or also the absence of issues with the methodological approach that we took, working from establishing the status quo to defining requirements to then finding solutions. So the way we went about with the overall project was not criticized except for one objection that we got, and that is from the Namibian CCTLD, so that's Eberhard Lisse, who has criticized the way we went about with this in multiple ways, as you know, because he has previously gone on record doing that. Apart from that, as mentioned, the way we went about with this was not criticized, but there was criticism on some of the aspects on our implementation. So we have been criticized for truncating the public comment period, resulting in a couple of comments that reserve the right to comment again at a later stage, and I think that this is something that we gladly accept to happen. At the same time, now that we have opted for a 30-day public comment period with exceptions for other language versions, we can't turn back the clock and make that unhappen. So that's something that we have to accept, and maybe we as a group should also respond that people will get another opportunity to respond to our work results, so that in total we have two public comment periods, one of 30, one of 40 days time. So that's one of the concerns. Another concern that has been voiced was that there needs to be more outreach. And in this outreach subject, we also got the suggestions that all public comment periods should be supported by graphics to make things easier to understand, and also that we should use language and models that are easy to understand so that people have an easier time understanding what we're trying to do. So in terms of outreach, I think we should acknowledge that there's more work to be done. We need to do more of an analysis. And this is sort of adding to what Kavu said in terms of what groups we reached, what geographic regions we reached in order to be able to demonstrate that we have done the outreach that we could do. Certainly we can't reach everybody with this very specialized topic. But outreach has been a concern. We had some comments with respect to jurisdiction, and that jurisdiction needs to be a key component of our work. I think that this suggestion or request is not so much a methodology-related subject, but that's more the substance that is being discussed within our discussion on the recommendations. So unless you disagree, I would suggest that we defer to other sections of the report where the jurisdiction topic is discussed. We will get back to that subject as we move to the through the report. But I guess the question for this group is whether we stick to our original suggestion that we would primarily be dealing with this, with the jurisdiction subject in work stream one, and make that a response to the public comments we received, or whether the group thinks that more work on jurisdiction needs to be done in this very phase of our work, i.e., within work stream number one. Our default setting, if you wish, is that this group had agreed that we would be dealing with things in work stream number two, and therefore my suggestion would be to respond to the jurisdiction comment that, again, we see various places in the comments we received, that we take good note of that, and that we will keep those comments that we received for further analysis when we get to this point in our deliberations in work stream number two. But that is something that, I would await your response, feedback, objections to, because I think that would be a change in our approach, at least slightly. I see Aubrey's hand is up. Aubrey, please.
Thank you. This is Aubrey speaking. Hopefully I can be heard okay. I think that the approach on this jurisdiction issue, I think that we can't just push it off and say, and I'm not saying that you said that, but just in case, that we can just say, oh, push that off to work stream two. I think we do have to review the decision we made in the light of that, of the comments that we've got, because they were rather serious and sometimes extensive. But that in considering it, again, looking at it again, perhaps making the same decision we made, not trying to prejudge that, that we also, if we do push it off into work stream two, we do it as more than just a bullet item, but actually do it with some real substantive explanation of the why it's being pushed off, and the how it will be dealt with, and just so it's certain that it's not a sweeping it under the carpet until later so we can get by transition. But so and that will be a delicate thing. And also the last point I wanted to add on that, I'm not sure that that's something that doesn't need to be done by the whole CCWG as opposed to within one of the work parties. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Very good points indeed. My suggestion was not that we would just wipe it off the table, but I would like to sense from this group whether, you know, after having gone through the comments, whether this is something that we should really retable for the whole group, or whether, you know, for this work stream, or whether this group should provide a robust rationale, having looked at the reports, and then move it to work stream number two. But I hope that there is agreement that we would allocate this task, at least for the time being, to work party number number one to take a look at and to analyze the reports in more detail and get back to our whole group with a suggestion, including a rationale for a response. So the jurisdiction topic is a recurring topic. Then we have another topic, which is the role of staff and the community. So how can staff and the community be held accountable? So I think that's something that needs our special attention, because that's something that we've heard of multiple times also before the public comment period started. With respect to the community accountability, there have been suggestions made by our advisors. I'd encourage you to take a look at that, at those. You know, so that's I think something that we all need to put more thought into. With respect to staff accountability, it was my understanding that we would subsumize that under the board accountability, because ultimately the board is responsible for staff actions. So I would like to get some feedback on whether this group thinks that we need to put more work, or that we should really separate staff accountability from board accountability. And do remember that when we discussed the IRP and the reconsideration process, we took note that you can certainly take action against actions by staff and not only by the board. Any instant feedback on that? So Cesar Bianco in the chat is responding that we don't or that we shouldn't look at staff accountability separately. Again, that was also my understanding. Any objection to clarifying that we see that as a matter that has been discussed by the group previously, and that we see that as a board accountability topic? There's some agreement, so I think we should take note of that. I see that there was some further discussion in the chat with respect to the last point we discussed, i.e. the jurisdiction issue. Avery, the idea was not to take away the discussion from the whole group, but I think for making the discussion manageable, we should task the work group or the work party with providing a proposal for response, including a rationale. So I hope that this clarifies. And Avery, you also asked when we did discuss the staff topic. I really would need to dig the archives, but we did have several opportunities where the question of what staff does opposed to what the board does was discussed. And what I took away from that, and obviously I'm not the only one, was that staff actions are ultimately controlled by the board, so that ultimately the board is held accountable for potential wrongdoings of staff, and that we would back this up by the RRP and the reconsideration process, which again cannot only be directed against board actions or inactions, but also relating to staff actions. The community accountability point was again also highlighted by Avery in the chat. Again, I guess this is a subject where we really need to do some more work and find ways to increase accountability of the community. I will be through with my comments in a moment. Then there were concerns about the roles of governments in our methodology. I would suggest that on this specific point, we should defer to the discussions of the government's roles and the other groups' roles in the overall accountability architecture, which is discussed elsewhere in the report, so that action and responses are provided there. Last point I would like to mention is that there have been some requests to further discuss some of the definitions that we're using, in particular the term public interest and what it means came up multiple times. So the question, I guess, for the whole group is whether we should actually reopen that subject. You will remember that we had a lot of discussions surrounding the public interest and what we put into our draft report so far is what we came up with as the best solution we could find at the time. So I guess I would appreciate feedback from this group as to whether we should just explain our thinking, again, the difficulties that we had with defining the public interest and why we came to where we were, or whether we should actually reopen that discussion on the public interest again. Caboose.
Thank you, Thomas. Public interest is an important issue, but it is very, very difficult to have some agreement on a exact definitions and the scope of public interest. In the light of what we had before, I think that it is difficult to reopen that discussions, and it may take or eat most of our time, which should be devoted to other very important issues that could be a solution or could be find a solution and response rather than going to something which we see no fate to have an agreement on that. So I suggest that perhaps we should not reopen the discussion on the public interest. Point number one. Point number two, we should not discuss the staff accountability. Staff are accountable directly to the board, and what we deal with the board accountability that we have properly addressed. So we should not enter into the micromanagement of the system and going to the lowest level of the staff and make them accountable to the community. It has some conflict with the structural arrangements in any organization if you go to that level. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose. So that's clear support for not reopening the discussion on both the staff accountability as well as the public interest the definition topics. Next in line is Steve.
Thank you, Thomas. 6 months ago, I dove into this notion of trying to define the public interest for purposes of ICANN's very limited scope. That conversation happened mostly on emails before we covered it in the calls, and it revealed some initial agreement with a very limited definition of public interest in the ICANN context. The one we put forth was the public interest for ICANN needs the availability and integrity of registrations, resolutions. So it's a simple statement, but it addresses the only two things that ICANN affects on the Internet, which are registrations of domain names and resolutions. And everything else gathers around those two aspects. So while there was some initial agreement that that was a good start, that conversation about a public interest definition took into multiple directions, as some would seek to add to that platform special attention to some other aspect that may go beyond the availability and the integrity. And everyone grew very tired of the discussion, and I think we let it go after about a week and a half. It might be that with ICANN's limited mission statement, which is part of our proposal, that that limited mission statement could resurface the discussion of what, at a minimum, public interest means in the ICANN context. So to have it be limiting may not be possible, but we could say what, at a minimum, it's the availability and integrity of registrations and resolutions, and then have that fit neatly into the mission statement portion of the bylaws that we're proposing, and then rely upon the limited mission statement to be what puts a cap on how expansive ICANN can be about pursuing initiatives in the name of the public interest. So I'd welcome revisiting it and be happy to work on that.
Okay, since we don't seem to have a clear view by the whole group, I think we should allow for the work party to take a look at it. I guess what's important is actually to look at whether the contributions we got from commenters add something to the discussion, or whether we hear arguments that have previously been made in the group that would justify for us to reopen entirely the discussion. Before we move to the stress test subtopic, there's one final point that I'd like to highlight, and that is a contribution from the ICANN board, which has asked for an impact analysis. And as we open it up for comments on the stress test, I would like, just like as a placeholder, to ask Steve and Cheryl, who are both on the call, to maybe also speak to the subject of impact analysis versus stress test, and how we see this request from the board, and whether we should make that a separate action item for our whole group. So these were the high-level topics for the methodology approach. With respect to stress tests, we got some suggestions for additional stress tests. We got some a lot of support for the notion of having stress tests at all. So, you know, we seem to be on the right track with stress testing, let alone the fact that we are required to do stress tests anyway, but the community seems to like what we're doing there. But there are some questions and there are some tweaks requested, and I'm not sure whether Steve and or Becky would like to speak to that. I'd like to give you the opportunity to speak to that topic.
Thomas, it's Steve Del Bianco. So shall I dive into a quick analysis of the 2.5 pages of stress tests?
Please do. And maybe you can also say a sentence or two about the impact analysis.
All right. So we'll start with the impact analysis. That was on page 16, item 73. And what the board is suggesting is that adopting the powers available under the reference mechanism of membership would have impact on the organization. This is not unlike two stress tests that were proposed by Chris Despain a few weeks ago, and the stress test work party has attempted to categorize those into new stress tests that should be in our second draft. And they get to this notion of whether a membership structure would introduce stresses on the organization itself if it has to change the way it does business, or if courts could potentially or conceivably become more involved in helping to arbitrate and figure out decisions about interpretation of ICANN's bylaws and mission statements. For the most part, we believe that that impact is minimal, since courts are only enforcing decisions. They're not interpreting. But I think that we can address the impact analysis as part of the reframed stress tests that were first put forth by Krista Spain 2 weeks ago. Okay, Thomas, I would quickly summarize the 11 comments we received on stress tests, which live on pages 17 through 19 of the comment document. There were three from governments, three from U.S. entities, and the rest were very well distributed. They are very generally supportive on the exercise of stress testing, as you indicated. A few reveal what I'll call ungenerously the notion of confusion between jurisdiction and where ICANN is incorporated. I think the attorneys educated me as a non-attorney that jurisdiction is a function of ICANN being subject to the laws of any nation where ICANN has activities, where that country can assert its legal reach over ICANN, and that really has very little to do with where ICANN happens to be incorporated. ICANN is incorporated in California under those laws, and it's within that framework of those laws that we put together these community powers. But I don't believe that has anything to do with jurisdiction on ICANN's activities, because if they're affecting the citizens or residents of a particular country, that country will feel that it has jurisdiction over ICANN. Of the three GAC comments, I wanted to note that two of them mentioned that we didn't implement stress test 21. Stress test 21 was the notion of what would happen if a CCTLD manager wanted to appeal a decision to revoke or to assign a CCTLD to a different manager. And as you recall, the stress test team concluded that we should just defer to the framework of interpretations on that and allow the CCNSO, work with the GAC and others, to come up with how they wanted to handle the framework of interpretations. So stress test 21 was sort of parked pending further development. And there's no intention, I think, even in our second draft, to do anything with that. One of the GAC members differed on stress test 18 and our response to that stress test, which would have suggested that ICANN is only obligated to work to find a mutually acceptable solution in cases where the GAC advice had consensus. I think the Danish government makes a great comment that we should look harder at capture of the various mechanisms from bodies other than just governments. It seems that we focus perhaps too tightly on how governments capture ICANN as opposed to other stakeholders who can capture different elements of the ICANN community. And that is, in fact, one of the stress tests that we have, stress test number 12. We're being asked to do a deeper dive on that. There's an invitation from the New America Foundation Open Technology Initiative to add two new stress tests, and they are fascinating. They get to this question of enforcing ICANN's contracts, and contract enforcement is a fundamental role of ICANN. Well, what happens if those contracts contain provisions that might conflict with the limited mission statement that ICANN has? And that has a going-forward view, but the stress test team is going to need help from the whole CCWG about whether the limited mission statement is retroactive. Does it look backwards in time at contracts that ICANN has already negotiated, say, as part of the new GTLD program? And how do we achieve consistency between the bylaws and mission statement core values and contracts that ICANN is already putting out, people are signing and enforcing? A couple of other associations, very generally supportive of the whole notion of stress tests, and would call out a particular one or two that they agreed with the way the conclusions were reached. I did want to note that there are a few folks who said that stress tests that drove changes, like the stress test 14 drove the changes to the affirmation of commitments, that we should then take stress test 14 out. But it was positioned as a stress test. It generated changes to the bylaws in the same sense of all of the accountability reviews. But there's no need, I think, to take the stress test out if they've, in fact, been responded to elsewhere in the document. The registry stakeholder group has asked for specific changes, revisions, and expansion on four categories of stress tests, and that's a detailed analysis that we'll do. Brazil was supportive. And that summarizes the 11 comments that we have on stress tests. Glad to take a cue or pass the baton back to you, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Steve. Any comments from the group? Tavus.
Thank you, Thomas. I think CCWG in general and any of us should not take a defending position for what we have prepared. Rather, we should be open to the comments and to see whether the comments are relevant and could improve what we have proposed. I'll take an example of ICANN board comments relating to the impact. They have experience for more than 16 years, and their comments should be duly and properly taken into account for two reasons. Reason one, there are comments from the people they have experienced, and second, if we do not listen to what they say and do not take them into account, when the proposal of CCWG goes to the NTIA, they will put negative comments saying that we made the comments were not considered. So I think we have to have a better understanding of what we propose and to see to what extent we could engage into the discussions and negotiations and understanding to find out the most appropriate way how to handle the issue. So once again, none of us should take any defending position of what they have written or they have prepared or they were initiating or sending. I see that defending or defendant's position by some of us, which may not be productive. Thank you.
Thanks, Tavus. That's a valuable reminder that we should be very open-minded when looking at the comments. I'm not sure whether I heard too much of a defensive attitude in the comments that that were made during this call. I guess what we need to do, and that goes not only for comments from the board but for all comments, is that we should analyze whether they're supportive or not, whether they are repeating arguments and themes that we have previously discussed, i.e. that we have already taken into account. And if this were the case, then we can say, okay, this has already been looked at, so the group doesn't have to reopen the debate. And there are other topics where we might get ideas that add something to the discussion, and then we need to look at how we best incorporate these ideas into our thinking. So I think, as you said, we shouldn't be defensive, but at the same time, we should be looking at, have we done this before? Are we just hearing arguments that have previously been made, or is something added to the discussion that should be reason for the group to reopen a debate on a certain topic? Steve, thanks so much for a sterling job, as usual, in explaining the comments we received on stress tests. And unless there are further comments on the methodology/stress test section, I would like to hand over to Mathieu to guide us through the next portion of the report. Sebastian, I see your hand is up, please.
Yes, thank you, Thomas. About methodology, I would like very much that the presenter avoid to have to push their own view in, and I know it's difficult, and I am sorry to say that, but when people say, they of course say that, or they rightly say that, or they, it's a way to influence the whole group. What we need today, it's an objective vision of the inputs and not the position of one or the other of the presenters. And once again, I understand that it's difficult, but I hope that everyone can try to stick to this more objective way of speaking to us, because we need to do and to have our own mind set and not the one from the presenter. Thank you very much.
Sebastian, applying your principle, I should be prevented from saying that I agree with this, but actually I do, and I also take this as a reminder personally to stay as objective as possible. Thank you so much for that. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas. Mathieu Veil speaking. So the next section is the section regarding mission and core values and fundamental commitments and core values. So looking at the comments in these sections, I think we can note that there is quite frequent support to the clarification of ICANN's mission that the group has been undertaking. In terms of enhancements and suggestions, and I'm just quoting those where I think there are at least two or three inputs going in the same direction. There is a call for clearer support of freedom of expression, human rights, this discussion that we've had and that's been taking place on the list. It's not a widespread call, but it is amongst several contributions. There's been a discussion that's being led by several, I think, private sector organization to clarify the balance. There's a section where we try to clarify what was meant by ICANN about balancing between values and commitments. It's quite a not being a lawyer, I would say a legalistic comment, but I think it's certainly something that we'll need to investigate further. Becky, do you want to add a word on this without going too much into the legal stuff, or
sure,
in general on the mission?
I think the one thing that we could also say is that there were some comments for narrowing and tightening the commitments and core values, and that they were so broad as to be too encompassing. The New America Foundation comment focused quite a bit on the mission core values and made an argument essentially for just stripping all of this down to mission and to a very sort of limited mission task. But otherwise, I think that there's general support for clarifying the mission, for making the mission enumerated as opposed to more expansive. We did get one very helpful comment from the IAB on some language, specific language. I'm sorry, Sebastian, I just described the comment as helpful, but that was my opinion, not necessarily objective. Over to you, Matthew.
Matthew, I think you might be on mute.
Okay, I was on mute. Thank you very much for reminding me, everyone. And thank you, Becky, again. We have some good comments in these sections. The two main discussion points, apart from the freedom of expression, are the ones about the sections of the mission, fundamental commitments and core values, which refer to the private sector-led organization. That was a topic of discussion within our group, and obviously it is also a topic of discussion in the public comment. So certainly Work Party 2 will have to do a to focus a part of its work on analyzing these comments and the underlying arguments, so we can see how we can move forward with that once we've listened very carefully to the community on this. And the last point that comes to my mind in terms of this section is a note that we've heard some support, but also strong care will be taken by ESSAC and ERSAC about the how security wording is placed in the document. That's what I get with my own personal bias when I look at this comment. And I think this, as I was saying, this it's very substantial and constructive substance for Work Party 2 to refine the mission and core value section of our report. But overall, it's pretty supportive overall. Any comments on this section? The room? No? So I suggest we move to the next section, which is about the fundamental bylaws. And I will turn to Leon for that.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. And well, with regards to fundamental bylaws, my sense of the different comments received is that there is general support for introducing this concept into the bylaws. And I don't identify any relevant objections, or rather than relevant, I don't identify any objections to the concept of adding fundamental bylaws. I can only highlight some comment from the IPC that states that that they don't believe that there's the need for additional means to propose or amend fundamental bylaws. And there are also some comments with regards to the threshold proposed on revisions or reviews to fundamental bylaws. Also, the ALAC notes that when speaking of reviews, we should be mindful of the timings and the recurrent reviews. And I think that, as I said, I cannot highlight any significant or rather meaningful objections to the introduction of the fundamental bylaws. And I would, of course, like to open the floor for comments on the section. Okay, I see no comments or no one raising their hand on the section speaking about fundamental bylaws. And there are no comments on the section. I have Steve Zolbianco. Yes, Steve?
Thank you, Leon. One of the fundamental bylaw questions we raised was whether Article 18 of ICANN's existing bylaws, which calls for the company shall have its principal place of business in Los Angeles, California. There was discussion about whether that become a fundamental bylaw, and I saw one comment on it in the stress tests section, but I haven't read all the rest of the comments that have been submitted. Understand if others from the community have indicated whether they think Article 18 should be a fundamental bylaw or not. It might be that the way we positioned that question in the body of our document, that we didn't get the kind of explicit attention to answering it that we needed. And maybe that's something we do in the second comment period, is to keep that question alive and put it in a way that people will understand. We'd like to know whether the community thinks this should be fundamental or should not. Because I would have expected more comments on that, but it's possibly the way we presented it that caused a few people to miss that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Steve. And yes, you have pointed out a significant discussion item, and we should definitely continue to look at it. And I don't know if there are any other comments or immediate reactions to what Steve just said, but I have on the queue Tijani and Kavu, so I'll go with Tijani Benjamin. Tijani, could you please take the floor?
Yes, regarding the introduction of the fundamental bylaw, there was an objection at all. But what we have to put in the fundamental bylaw, there was a lot of comments on that, and especially for what you just raised now about the location of ICANN. And also there was a general comment saying that in the fundamental bylaw, we have to put only the standing and fundamental issues of the organization, but not any operational or functional things. So I think that if we speak about the principle of fundamental bylaw, yes, there wasn't objection. But if we speak about what we have to put in it, there was a lot of comments on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. I realized that Kavu's hand was up, but then it was brought down. Kavu, do you still want to make some comment?
No, thank you. I down my hand. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavu. As Keith Tracy points in the chat box, fundamental bylaws refer to higher threshold for amendment, and not that it's off the table, of course. And are there any other comments with regards to the section on fundamental bylaws and the comments? I remind you that this comments end on page 33 of the document, and the last comment on fundamental bylaws is numbered 156. Okay, so having no other comments on the fundamental bylaws section, I'd like to turn now to Thomas for the independent review panel enhancement. Thomas?
Well, thank you very much, Leon. And this seems to be the one of the topics where we got most comments from the community. And I think that places the burden on us to do all these comments justice. So this might be a point actually that's going to take less time than the others, because we will have more in-depth analysis by the work party led by Becky. I think what can be stated is that looking at the various comments, I haven't spotted a single objection to enhancing ICANN's IRP. To the contrary, most of the contributors do speak in favor of enhancing the IRP. One more fundamental criticism that was made was to further clarify the relationship between the IRP and the reconsideration process. And then there's a lot of discussion about the niceties, the details of the IRP, which obviously we haven't spelled out yet. So I guess that Becky's group needs to thoroughly analyze the comments that have been made that in part actually go down to the wordsmithing level. But I think that one of the encouragements we got from the community was actually to look very thoroughly at diversity when it comes to panelists. So this topic that we discussed earlier on about inclusiveness is found here as well. But again, good news is that we get a lot of support. There's a plethora of comments, and I'd like to turn over to Becky to maybe highlight a few that she would like to address with the whole group.
So thank you. I think that's exactly right. The vast majority of the comments were supportive of enhancing the independent review process. They were largely supportive of the standing panel approach. There were some questions and suggestions about the proposed mechanism for nominating and confirming members of the panel. Some folks suggested that the board had too much power in that process. Some suggested that we ought to do something like a request, you know, a call for expressions of interest or something along the lines of a tender that was being done for the TIC process in the new GTLD context. Most of the comments supported the notion that the conclusions of the panel should be binding. There were a few exceptions to that, and one raised by the government of France that we will need to look at because there clearly are constraints on the IRP was not, as we proposed it, was not set up as a investor state arbitration, which is something that's familiar to governments. So we just need to clarify that. There were a couple of comments regarding the sort of the level of complication some requests for sort of clarification on what's in and what's out, and just a more detailed, easier to follow roadmap for how it would work. And then clearly there were some questions about the interrelationship between the reconsideration process and independent review. So I think that the bottom line is that there's a lot of very substantive comments on the details, but the sort of general takeaway is that there is support for the process and the enhancements that we've outlined. Over to you, Thomas.
Thanks so much, Becky. Any questions or comments from the group? Cavus.
Yes, Thomas. The IRP and the binding nature of the decisions, we need to look at that one once again in the light of the comments that we have received. It may be very tough that you give everything to finally to one single individual or one individual to decide with binding nature. There should be some possibility of appeal to that because I listened to the discussions in some of the email exchange that some people, they don't want even after that binding decision to have any possibility to go to the court, and they want to finish with that binding decisions. It would be difficult to put the fate of everything in hand of one individual to decide with binding decision. Unless there is some appeal process. And after that, if it is confirmed, then would be binding. So one stage may not be sufficient. And the court should always be available in case that anything goes wrong. I gave you an example in the previous call. I don't want to repeat that. There might be a cases that I can board decide on something correctly, and the community object to that, and I can confirm that this previous decision is okay and goes to the IRP, and IRP confirm the views of the community, then there would be some problems. On the other side, if I can decide on something wrongly and community does not object to that, and that situation, how will we handle it? So the binding decisions without going to the court is difficult. We would have always the possibility that one side should have the way to go to the court if has object to the decisions of the IRP. Thank you.
Thanks, Kaboos. I'd like to turn to Becky to respond to that question.
Yeah, so there definitely were some comments that about the need for, you know, some refinements within the issue, whether, you know, if the parties elected to go with a single arbitrator, whether that could be binding or whether it would create precedent, or rather it would only be, you know, three member panels that created binding and or precedential decisions. Then there were some suggestions that, you know, a decision of three member panel could be appealed to the standing panel as a group. What we proposed contemplated the ability to go to court to enforce a decision of the IRP. I think that we need to distinguish between governments and other parties in terms of the resort to court might be. But the notion that everything is appealable to a court, every decision of the IRP is appealable to a court, is in some tension with those not insignificant number of people who expressed concern about a model that sort of created more incentives to go to courts to resolve disputes. So I would just caution that you know, this is work that the WP2 is really going to have to dig in on, because there are clearly some trade-offs and some nuances that we have to deal with.
Thank you very much, Becky. Next in line is Mathieu.
Thanks, Becky. Thanks, Thomas. My question is, I noted several comments which were pointing to a suggestion that a party would not be eligible, would not have standing in front of the IRP unless it has participated to the previous public comment period, and etc. Did you notice that as well? I thought it was a new idea that we hadn't discussed before, and therefore I don't know if it's something you've noted, and certainly it's something that I will be interested to look at further analysis. It was a bit surprising to me, but I wondered if Becky, you had already had a chance to look at this.
I haven't looked at it in depth. I have noted it, and it's definitely on the list of things that we're going to spend some time thinking about. And if I could just give a plug, there is a WP2 call scheduled for Wednesday, I think around 1900. I'll recirculate that, but to the extent people can set aside the time for that call, that would be very helpful because we do have a lot of work ahead of us.
Okay, so unless there are further comments for the IRP section, let's go to the reconsideration process now, and for that I'd like to hand it over to Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas. Mathieu Veil speaking. So the reconsideration comment starts at number 196. For those of you desperately trying to follow on the screen and on the document, there are many supportive comments regarding the reconsideration enhancements that the proposal suggests. One item of concern, as already mentioned by Becky, is the relationship between the reconsideration process and the IRP. There were also concerns about, or at least reinforcement of concerns that we were raising already regarding the composition of the panel of board members during the reconsideration, the independence from legal, from ICANN Legal. Those were items that were mentioned several times. And there was a point raised regarding a formulation that was we were mentioning, a proposal mentioned relevant information, and there was a discussion whether it should be relevant or material information, and that seems to raise some interest among the legal community. I must admit that was a little bit subtle for me, but I think that's the useful input for Work Party 2. And I've also noted a comment, I think it was from ALAC, pointing out to whether we had considered that some of the decisions to be reconsidered were coming from external panels and that we might have to give some special consideration to that aspect. A short summary of these comments on reconsideration would be this, a number of supportive comments, some concerns. So my initial assessment, and not being in Work Party 2, and this gives me a lot of bias, would be some refinements, but we are on the right track on that topic. I don't know if Becky or even Robin have had a chance to look at this. I see Cavus' hand is up. Cavus?
Yes, Mathieu, you have asked, or Thomas has asked, the relation between reconsideration and the IRP. I think it was in some of the discussions that I have raised or pointed toward this, that reconsideration and IRP are complementary to each other. They are not replacing each other, generally speaking, and naturally. We do not go to the IRP directly. We start the soft process, which is reconsideration. If someone makes a decision anywhere, in any way in our life, they give us some time to comment on that for reconsideration. You receive a bill from the telephone company, they give you 10 days, or the bank 30 days, and so on for reconsideration. So we should not go to the IRP directly. So I think that the relation is that they are complementary to each other, and they should be done in a stepwise process. You start with the reconsideration, and if the ICANN board does not reply to the reconsideration, which is not satisfactory on something which is right and the views of the communities, then community go to the IRP. Otherwise, directly going to IRP and bypassing the reconsideration does not seem to be very productive. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. I think the input we're getting is that we need to be very clear on how those two interact. And that's a very interesting point from that we're getting from this public comment, that we were not clear enough. And the point you're making, the approach you're suggesting is certainly promising. And I see Becky in the chat acknowledging that this will need to be taken into account. Anything else? I don't know if, yes, I see Robin on the call. Robin, you have any comment on this reconsideration process inputs? Okay. So I suggest we move to the next item, and I'm turning to Liam for the mechanism to empower the community. Quite a small item in our public comment. Leon?
Thank you very much, Mathieu. And I believe that it's actually, if not the point or the item that has received most comments, it certainly has received many, many comments. So we'll begin on comment number 222, and there is someone typing really heavily in the background, so if you could please mute your line while not speaking, that would be very helpful. So the different comments received on the mechanism to empower the community seem to be supportive of establishing this empower mechanism. However, there is still the discussion on two main subjects that I identify through the comments. The first concern, or the most widely raised concern, is with regards to who will guard the guardians, and this is how will those being part or designated to the community mechanism will be held accountable to their designating constituencies or SOs or ACs. So this is, of course, one point that has, as I said, been widely discussed and continues to be discussed, of course, since this is a subject in which many of us, and it's reflected on the comments, it could lead us to an endless loop of holding people accountable to whom and how. So this is, of course, something that needs to be further discussed, and maybe this is a... It's worth opening the floor for comments on whether those in this meeting feel that there should be an ending point to the comments on who will guard the guardians. So are there any comments on this concern that has been widely raised through the comments on the mechanism to empower the community? And I see a question from Holly Gregory regarding how the community groups currently hold EACs and SOEs accountable. And I also see Avatorio's hand up. So, Avery, could you please take the floor?
Yeah, thank you. This is Avery speaking. I think we have to be able to present a coherent argument for why what we're setting up does not go to that infinite regress, or does not reasonably go to that infinite regress. I think some models are more likely to than others, and I think that that's what's incumbent on us. It's not that we should stop talking about it at a certain point. I think we should be able to explain why it is not likely that the model we're presenting goes to infinite regress. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Harvey. some of the comments also state that any solution or any proposal that we end up coming with should be as simple as possible and should also avoid leading the community and ICANN into the courts. So this is, of course, another concern that has been widely discussed by the community. And as I said, another point that has been widely commented is the fact that the proposal considers a membership model as the most viable way to achieve the different powers for the community. And my sense, and of course I could be wrong, my sense is that most of the comments are supportive or at least understand that a membership model needs to be set up for the community to be able to enforce the different powers that we're trying to provide it with. But there are also comments that call for considering alternative ways for achieving this. There is, of course, a set of comments that call for to get deeper into the discussion on whether the designator model would be the most feasible instead of the membership model. And there are also comments that continue to discuss on whether the SROs or ACs should be members, or if, as some have suggested, maybe the chairs of the set SROs or ACs should be designated as members within the structure. And well, this is, of course, something that we will continue to discuss. And another concern is how incorporating or forming these unincorporated associations, there are many members that feel that this would carry a level of complexity and side effects within the ICANN structure. There is also there are also many comments with regards to maybe the unintended consequences that this membership model could have upon the ICANN structure and how ICANN will continue to function, of course. And I think that this is some point that we would really welcome your input with regards to this this comment. So if there's anyone that wants to comment on what I have just said, it would be very important that we could do that. I see Caboose hand is up. Caboose, could you please take
that? Yes, Leon. I think the comments should be seen not to be contradictory to the reality. On the one hand, if you want to have full power to do something, we have to pay for that. And the payment is some complexity in the process. You could not have simple process and have full power. They are contradicting to each other. So we have to be very careful of that. And I think the issue of the membership has been properly mentioned in several legal assessments. If you want to have power in all six areas, you have no choice but membership model. If you want to have power on four of those six, you could go with designation or designator with some other arrangements and with some difficulty. So we have to look at that one. The issue that is to be replied is the current situation that I have asked in the previous mail and sent you something, that we need a table to see that if there is a membership, who among the SOs and AC has the right to all of those six powers and who does not have, from the AC and the SO point of view, but not from the six powers against membership and designator. So we have to have another comparative table. But we should not argue about the membership and designator and go to the simplest. There is no simple way. If you want simple, there is less accountability. You want more accountability and more control, you have to pay for that, and there is no real simple reply to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comment, Kavuz. And yes, you are right into to the extent that if we want to have some power to enhance our accountability, we will, of course, need to consider forming these unequal break associations. And one thing that is important to remember is that either way we choose, if we choose to go with a designated model or with a membership model, we would still need to form unincorporated associations, and this would, of course, not deal with the concern that some members have raised with regards to the perceived or the alleged complexity that forming these unincorporated associations would carry. So this is very useful, Kavuz. Thank you for your comment. And I don't know if there's anyone else who wants to comment on this section of the document. I see Matthew Bale. Matthew, could you please take the floor?
Thanks, Leon. I think it's important that we all remind ourselves that regarding this question about the mechanism, we've had it's very recent. We've had input from SSAC saying that basically they want to remain an advisory body, so would not want to participate into the mechanism as a voting member or anything. AIRSAC seems to be in a very similar mindset, and we are hearing a lot of concerns about governments about the ability to join a system that would be member-driven. So that's there's a lot of parameters that we'll have to take into account on that matter. So I think it was Jordan saying this in the chat. It is extremely important on that topic that we distinguish between factually analyzing the comments we're receiving and then moving the discussion forward. Those are very different steps, and I think the challenge on Work Party 1 is to ensure we really distinguish between this analysis and then highlighting the issues we have to take forward further and then moving them forward. This is going to be a very a discussion will carry way beyond Buenos Aires, certainly. But I think it's worth mentioning that we will have to refine the system anyway, because some parts of the community are providing us with very clear input on whether they want to be part of the system or not. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew. I have Tijani Benjamin next on the queue. Tijani.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, excuse me. Thank you, Leon. I hope that you hear me well, because I saw in the chat that someone didn't hear me well. As for the membership or designator model, I don't think this is the main problem. The main problem is that any model chosen must give the opportunity to all the community stakeholders to participate in the exercise of those powers. And this was the problem. And this is where there were a lot of comments and a lot of more or less objections on some points. So I think that we have to think about that. And the second point about this issue was the enforceability. There is a lot of objections about going to the court and making the affairs of ICANN dealt with in the jurisdiction, in any jurisdiction. So those are the main points, in my point of view, that was raised in the comments, and that we have to address carefully, and we have to find the right solutions. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
to Yanni. Unfortunately, your audio seems to be breaking a little, so I could catch a couple of your comments, but I did not quite catch your whole comment. So if you could summarize these either on the chat box or on the list, that would be, of course, very helpful. Next in the queue, I have...
You hear me better here. You hear me better now.
Yes, I think that is better.
You hear me better. Okay, I said that the main issue, the main the comments were very strong about two things. The first point is any system we would choose should give to all the community stakeholders the ability to participate in the exercise of the powers. The second point was the enforceability. Going to the court, it was a big concern for the public comment, and I saw a lot of reaction on this. I think those are the two main points that we have to address carefully. Thank you. I hope you heard me well.
Yes, it was far better. Thank you very much, Tijani. Next on the queue, I have Ruluk. Mayor Ruluk, could you please take the floor?
Thank you, Leon. This is Ruluk. Mayor, for the record, can you all hear me?
Yes, we do listen to you.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to bring a nuance into the comments made by Leon and by Caboose. And there was extensive discussion on the mailing list, but now there was no reaction. And my nuance would be that it is not that in order to have those powers, we need the SOs and the ACs to become unincorporated associations. It is to have legal enforceability that we would need an incorporated association. It's my point, and I think it's been forwarded by several people on the mailing list, that in practice that legal enforceability will not be necessary because the powers will be available once they are incorporated into the bylaws and we have a structure like a community council or something to actually enforce them. So I just want to point out again that the unincorporated associations are only needed to legally enforce the power, so to take ICANN to court, and there are alternatives to that. So I don't think we should over-enthusiastically conclude that this is the only way that we can reach our objective.
Thank you very much, Ruluk. Are there any other comments with regards to this section of the comments document? Okay. I see some support from Pierce de Spain to Ruluk's comment. And, well, since there are no further comments on this section so far, I would like to turn now to Thomas for the power on reconsidering rejecting the budget and strategy operating plans. Thomas?
Thanks so much, Leon. And I'm looking now at page number 65 and paragraphs 266 onwards. This is relatively brief. To put it in a nutshell, we received a lot of support for the community power to reconsider, reject budget or strategy and operating plan. There are two caveats to it, mainly, one of which is that there's the need for a consultation process between the community and the board in order to ensure that this community power does not have to be exercised because it's deemed to be disruptive to the organization, potentially. So I think my suggestion, subject to further analysis by the sub-team, would be that our response would be that we need to be clearer on that requirement, which, as you will recall, we have discussed over and over again. And I think there's no one in this group that objects to the requirement for a consultation process prior to the adoption of the the documents, you know, the budget strategy or operating plan, to make sure that the community had the opportunity to voice its concerns or wishes, and for the board to be able to properly take them into account. So this is already there. I think we should just be more transparent about it and respond in that fashion. The other concern that has been voiced is that there might be a back and forth between the community and the ICANN board. If memory doesn't fail me, but Jordan will have the opportunity, if he so wishes, to add to that, we already have something in our proposal that would prevent a back and forth from taking place, but maybe we need to be more transparent on that feature of our proposal as well. But all in all, the commenters have been very supportive of our proposal, and I think I would stop here and just open it up for group members to respond or comment. And Jordan, should you wish to add to this, just put yourself in the queue. There doesn't seem to be any. Jordan, fire away.
Thanks, Thomas. It's Jordan Carter here for the record. And I just wanted to reiterate my apology for not having been able to read all this material in the past 24 hours and not being as familiar with it as I could be. I just wanted to say, Thomas, that I largely agree with your reading of the support and the two kits. To be clear, there already are consultation processes in place, quite extensive ones around the budget and strategic and operating plan processes, and my observation and the observation of people who have been involved with them for a long time is that they are improving. So I think there's a range of helpful things here, but there aren't any fundamental roadblocks to us getting this done.
Jordan, the audio was cut off. Are you still there?
I think I finished, so that's why I stopped talking. And turned my mic off.
Sorry, it sounded a little bit abrupt from an acoustic point of view. So, unless further comments from the group, I think we can move on to the next subject, which will be led by Mathieu. Mathieu, over to you.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Mathieu speaking. So the next subject is starting at item 288 on page 69, and it's the changes to the standard bylaws. Let's not spend too much time on this. Feedback is positive. There are some parameters, concerns about the time limit of 15 days to initiate the objection to a standard bylaw change. And I've also noted some comments regarding the threshold. There seems to be some confusion about three-quarters, two-thirds. So some things that the Work Party 1, I think, will be able to review efficiently. And there was an outstanding input from AFNIC. I'm not using any bias here, calling for care if the changes are about some of the ASO or AC structures, then we might need to consider whether there needs to be some specific relationship with this ASO or AC. Let's not take too much time on this unless there are any other comments, but I think that outlines that we've had some valuable input, but we're on the right track. Are there any specific questions on that section? If not, I would suggest we move to Leon for the fundamental bylaw change section.
Thank you very much, Matthew. And well, with regards to the fundamental bylaw section, pretty much the same as Matthew just said with regards to the bylaw changes, the regular bylaw changes. Most of the comments are, rather all of the comments are supportive of having a set of fundamental bylaws designed or stated or classified as fundamental bylaws. There are a couple of comments by the business constituency with regards to Article 18 on whether should that be a fundamental bylaw. I think that Steve Del Bianco has already commented on that before, but it's this comment that the business constituency has made. And also there are some comments from the IPC on with regards to the requirements for this recommendation. And they are saying that it does not appear to be a well-defined list of requirements so far. So I think these are the main concerns with regards to fundamental bylaws. As I said, all the comments received are supportive of adding a set of fundamental bylaws. So I'd now like to open the floor for comments on fundamental bylaws. Okay, I see Steve Del Bianco's hand up. Steve, could you please take the floor?
It's a brief question. 318 is the board's comment. Staff has summarized it by saying that, quote, we recognize the board does not have unilateral ability to change the bylaws. But today, they do. The board can vote to change bylaws itself. There is no community input. So is the board being descriptive of today, or are they being normative and endorsing the change that we're recommending here?
Thanks, Steve. Well, this is definitely something that should need some clarification. So are there any other comments with regards to, I see Sebastien Bachelet. Sebastien, could you please take the floor?
Yes, thank you very much, Sebastien Bachelet. Steve, you are right with your question, but in your interpretation of the current way of doing it, the board didn't change the bylaw just by himself. There is a comment, a publication of the proposal, comment period, and I guess usually the board take into account the comments made. And it's not totally black and white. And I have no answer about what you're asking, but just to be sure that the current process is well described. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Sebastian. Any other comments on this section? Okay. So having no more comments on this section, I'd like to turn now to Thomas for recalling individual ICANN directors. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Leon. And I'm now looking at page 70, the very bottom of page 70, paragraph number 325, which is already on page number 71. We're now going to discuss the community power to recall individual ICANN directors, which is broadly supported by the commenters. I have not seen a single comment speaking against that, apart from maybe the one comment that we received from .NA challenging everything that we did. So I think we should take note of that overarching objection to our work results. But apart from that, there is broad support. I've just been pointed out to one comment from Afraro that is not supported, that is not supportive. So I apologize for the oversight. So there seems to be one objection in this section. But apart from that, the community power is endorsed by the community. We do, however, have some requests for refinements of the process, which I think we cannot discuss here. Also, I'd like to point out that one question that we still tagged as unresolved seems to remain unresolved, and that is the question of how to deal with NOMCOM appointed board members. And I've seen two comments that were in favor of the current NOMCOM to take on the task of recalling directors, and two comments that ask for either another committee or a sub-team of the NOMCOM to take on that task. I think that some more work on that needs to be done by the work party. And I note that particularly ALEC has offered a spectrum of the views inside ALEC on how to approach this, but I'm sure that Alan will speak to those who has put himself into the queue. But let's move first to Tijani first. And Tijani, maybe you can move as close to the microphone as you previously did, because you were much easier to understand when you did so. Tijani.
Thank you very much, Thomas. It wasn't because I was far from the microphone. I was speaking on the phone, and now I changed to the Adobe Connect. That's why you hear me better. Okay, let's come to the objection. You said the objection of AFRA law about recalling individual members. AFRA law didn't object to recalling individual members. AFRA law said that recalling members without reason is not acceptable. And AFRA law said the recall must be done by the whole community. The trigger must be done by the whole community. It shouldn't be the right of the appointing body to recall the director. Those were the issues that AFRA law expressed. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that clarification, Tijani. So even better, there is no objection to the community power in this section, I'm sure that work party. Two, in this case, we'll take a look at the refinements that you have for Ellen.
Thank you very much. My comments are akin to Tijani. Certainly parts of our community, and I believe also the board, had said that if we are to remove individual members, it should be a community action, not an individual ACSO that appointed them action. So we certainly have some difference on whether, on which way it should be. My understanding from the legal advice was that the only mechanism that we could put in place was that an appointing body removes the entity, that we can't have a different one, which is why we went to the NOMCOM, having to remove NOMCOM appointees through some construct or another, because we couldn't have the rest of the community removing them. So I think we need clarity from that on legal counsel as to what is legal and what is not, so that, you know, we put some constraints around what the options are we're looking at. The second difference between various bodies, and again, some people in at large said it, the board said it, or implied it, that we should only be removing people for cause, and that is cause that could be documented and therefore presumably appealed. And that adds a level of difficulty to the whole process, and I guess we need some guidance from legal counsel as to what extent this is legal or optional, and then we need a substantive discussion on which way do we want to go. From my perspective, removing a director is akin to a divorce on irreconcilable differences. You know, not necessarily something you can document, but just saying the relationship is not working anymore. Identifying specific failures that perhaps can be appealed puts it in a completely different context. And I think we need to decide what we're looking for. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Caboose?
Yes, Thomas. I have sent you before a set of questions
which is very important, which is not properly answered in any of the legal assessment. I asked if possible to have a table. In that table, we have a vertical columns, 7 SOs and ACs, plus the NOMCOM, and on horizontal, you have the 6 powers in 2 options. Option 1, SO and AC are members, and option 2, SO and AC are not members. Which power they could exercise in each of those cases, that is very, very important. And I also asked the question whether, if we take the designator approach, whether ACs who do not designate any board member are still called designator because they don't designate anybody. So do they have any power at all or not? And there is ambiguity in the 29 voting procedures that some of the ACs could not be part of those 29s, and it is not quite clear. So without that table, it is absolutely difficult to understand who could exercise what power under what conditions. So we have to have that table, and I have explained it quite clearly in the question that I sent. It is about half a page, and I don't want to put it in the chat here, but you have that, and it was promised that the legal advisor look at that one and reply to that. He's not replying to me. He should reply for everybody that we should know that quite, that answer quite clearly that if an SO is a member, what of the 6 powers could be exercised? If SO is not member, what power could be exercised, and so on and so forth. And the question of designator, whether the 3 ACs which do not have any director designated by them are still called the designator, have any power to do anything. And then recall or removal of the board with and without cause is 2 different things. It should be clearly mentioned that the area that they could without cause recall and with cause recall. This is not also are not quite clear. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Josh, I assume you've put yourself in the queue to respond to Cavus.
Yes, thank you. This is Josh. Cavus, I think we've tried to make clear that the particular SO or AC is not really, has no consequence on your question. The question is just whether any SO or any AC is a member or a designator. And so you have to look at who you are choosing to have be a member or who is choosing to just be a designator, if you had both. So, and we've already prepared a chart that says which, and we've shared it with you all, that says which of the powers. And as you noted previously, the members can exercise clearly all 6 of the powers. The designators could be appointed to exercise 4 of those powers. So if you made an SO, a designator would have certain powers. If you made it a member, it could have certain powers. But it's up to the SOs or ACs themselves to decide whether they want to be members or designators, or up to this working group to decide whether there should be any members or just designators. But the, again, the individual SO or AC really has no bearing. That doesn't drive the decision as to what power it has. The power it has is driven by what kind of group it's going to be, whether it's going to be a member or perhaps something less, like a designator.
Thanks, Josh. Cavus, you've put yourself in the queue again.
Yes, thank you very much, Josh. If you provide that information in a legal manner that we could look at that one. But it's important that if one AC or some AC does not wish to be a member or cannot be a member, what is their positions, and we would be very appreciative if that should be also explained. What is their position if they cannot be a member or they do not want to be a member, whether they still remain a designator or not, and what is their relation with the, those who are members in removal of the, for instance, the entire board member. Could they participate in that or they could not participate in that? Thank you.
Thanks, Tavus. I think that your additional questions have been understood, and it's my understanding that this is work in progress. Let's take a look at that offline. There has been some communication with you to confirm that we got your questions right. So I think we should leave it there for the moment. Holly, you had your hand raised. Did you still want to comment?
So I lowered it because you mentioned it. We do need to have some questions from Kavus certified. We are working on expanding out the chart and seeing how we can make it clear around what can be exercised, even though it's not enforceable. And we're working on that, but I understood that Kavus had some other questions that were going to be provided to you in writing so you could decide whether you wanted to certify them to us. Thank you.
Thanks, Holly. And Kavus, Mathieu had posted a link in the chat to the table that has previously been produced. Maybe you can also take a look at that, whether it satisfies your needs for information, because that's already completed. Okay, with that, I think we can close this part of the discussion and move to the next agenda item, which is the recalling of the whole board, and that will be led by Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Mathieu speaking. So the next power is the recall of the board, and I think, just like other powers, there is an overall support for the power itself. No significant objection to introducing this power to recall the entire board. I'm on page 61, comment number 347, by the way. I think the feedback we're getting on this particular power is, some concerns about the potential for disrupting ICANN operations. And there certainly is a need to clarify the caretaker board and what would be placed to protect against too many adverse effects of this power, which is, however, clearly conceived and perceived as a last resort. There are some comments advocating for a higher threshold of 80% instead of 75% for this power. Some comments requesting more clarity about the circumstances upon which this power could be invoked. I noted a comment by Lynx that was suggesting, it was an isolated comment suggesting that any ASO or AC should have the power to spill the entire board. And so that was the most disruptive comment compared to our initial proposal. So once again, some clearly useful comments that Work Party 1 will be able to deal with, I guess, and something we had anticipated around the concerns of around disruption that we still need to elaborate on. Are there any things that I'm missing in this section, comments, questions? No. So conscious of time, let's move to the next section about the AOC, Leon.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. And with regards to the section of the AOC incorporation to the ICANN bylaws, most of the comments or practically all the comments are supportive of incorporating the AOCs into ICANN bylaws.
However, they highlight or they stress the need to take care of this incorporation of the AEOCs from different approaches. Some of the comments recognize that key aspects of the AOCs must be incorporated into ICANN bylaws, and other comments recognize that some of these AOC points have been envisioned and designed from a U.S. perspective, and if we are to incorporate these AOC's key points into the ICANN bylaws, we should think of the actual context and the actual situation in which we are trying to incorporate this affirmation of commitments key points into the bylaws. And well, I think that it's, that highlights pretty much the different comments on the AOCs. There are, of course, some concerns, especially with regards to having ICANN incorporated in the United States it mentions that it would be of a concern for many governments, of course, and this is something that should be further discussed and carefully thought of while drafting any bylaws provisions that incorporate this affirmation of commitments key point. And with regards to the reviews, there is also wide support for incorporating reviews, permanent reviews to the key points that will be incorporated from the affirmation of commitments. And pretty much all the comments agree that this review process would enhance ICANN's accountability. And there is also a couple of comments with regards to how the affirmation of commitments should be incorporated with regards to the language of being of ICANN being a private sector led organization. Of course, governments have raised their voice and provided with comments with regards to having the ability to participate on equal footing with the private sector. So we're looking now at page, this comments end on page 80, and the last comment is number 397. So I'd like to open the floor now for comments on this document section. Are there any comments with regards to... I see Kevus hand this up. Kevus, could you please take the floor?
Yes, I think looking into the incorporation... affirmation of commitment, I think it has been analyzed that most of the issues which are fundamental and which are important, they are suggested to be included in the ICANN bylaw or in the fundamental bylaw, but the remaining it not. So I don't think that we should give a general nature for all of the items of affirmation by commitment. Those which are necessary, they put. If they, we don't put them in the bylaw, where we put them? And if we don't put them in the bylaw, put it somewhere else, what is the status of that somewhere else? How should it be enforced? So it is important to see that those which were identified to be in bylaw, they were necessary in the view of the CWC. That is important and should be in the bylaw, either bylaw traditional, the standard, or bylaw in the fundamental, and the others which were not. So we should not talk about affirmation of commitment. We should talk about the provisions, which provisions they contested not to be in the bylaw. This is one. With respect to the equal footing of government, if the only area, I may be not right, the only area that they have equal footing, that government currently they have advisory. capacity, and they could. They, if, do they want to have a voting capacity in that case? There are two ways. Either they should be an SO, if not, remain AC, but voting capacity to have a director like the ALAC. So is that the case that you understood from the comment from the government?
This is Aubrey. Can you put me in the queue?
Yes, Aubrey, you're next.
Okay, thanks, and I apologize for any extra noise. I am in a car on the way to airport. There's a couple things. One, with regard to the government's participation in some of the reviews, like the ATRT, they have participated as full members, not just as observers and advisors. So I wanted to point that out. I wanted to point out, I think you may have mentioned it, but I wasn't sure, that the fact that people in the comments have asked for more flexibility in terms of how all these various reviews go together. I think in terms of calling them AOC reviews, that is just a convenient handle for it. But obviously, as it goes forward, they just become reviews of a particular nature. The other thing that I think was an important request of us was how the AOC itself progresses, evolves, etc., after. So we may want to put a little bit of work into trying to explain how that process could work. We did talk about it. I just don't know that we ever got around to writing it and putting it in. Thanks. Going back to mute.
Thank you very much for this, Avery. Are there any other comments on this section? Okay. So now I'd like to close this item and go to my co-chair Thomas Rickard to review the section on changes suggested by stresses. Thomas, could you please take the floor?
Yes, thank you, Mathieu. Thank you, Leon. Being conscious of time, let me just briefly summarize that there is support for the changes to the bylaws supported by the stress test, but there has been considerable discussion with respect to stress test number 18. So that seems to be the main topic for the commenters to chime in on. And I would just like to leave it there and confirm to the group that this is work that will be taken on by Cheryl, Steve, and others to further analyze. So that we can now move to the workstream two items, and with that, I'd like to hand over to Mathieu, please.
Thank you, Thomas. I think we've already covered some of the input from workstream two, because basically what the workstream two comments show is that then we need to certainly be very clear on demonstrating that Workstream 2 does not mean we're putting a topic under the carpet. So being more stronger in terms of how and when we're going to deal with these issues is apparently expected. The jurisdiction issue was highlighted several times as a very important one for Workstream 2 in several comments. There were mentioned about the board staff, community staff relationship that came up as well, including interesting suggestions about disclosure of staff engagement with the government representatives that were mentioned several times. So that was more about transparency than the redress part. And an interesting suggestion that came back a couple of times as well is that whether we should introduce, as part of Workstream 2, the assessment of the efficiency of the Workstream 1 mechanisms. And I think that's a topic we'll have to discuss how we move forward with this. So Workstream 2 items are not allocated to work parties, so probably the abstract of this will be undertaken by the co-chairs and then share with the group, just like the others.
And since we only have 5 minutes left, I think I would leave it at that, unless there are any questions on question two. No questions. So I'm turning to Leon or Thomas. I think now we should certainly... okay, so I see Thomas is suggesting that I move continue. So what we're expecting from work parties now is...
This is Thomas. Can I ask Mathieu for a signal whether his call was dropped? So his call was dropped. So I suggest that I briefly take over. I think what we should clarify before we end this call in 4 minutes' time is what the task for the work parties are. And actually, we do have three tasks for the work parties, one of which would be for the work parties to go through the public comment review tool, i.e. for the sections that have been allocated to them, and draft responses for the comments and actions field in the public comment review tool. Not for them to decide, but for them to make a suggestion as to how we should respond to the respective community member that made the comment. And the answer can be, this has already been dealt with, this is off topic, this is something that we will further look into, this is something that will be dealt with in another section of the report. And then, so that would be the preparation of feedback in this document that we've been discussing today. The second action item would be to classify the feedback that we received in accordance with the methodology that we have agreed on, and state whether there is consensus on this or agreement with a certain suggestion that we made, whether there is broad support, significant opposition, or whether we have divergence, so that we can then take stock of that and proceed to consensus building for individual questions. So these two items we suggest need to be concluded before we freeze the document prior, before the Buenos Aires meeting, i.e. the date for that would be the 16th of June. And the third step that's then going to need being worked on would actually be digesting all the input we received and improving or rethinking the suggestions that we have put in our meeting, that we have put into our report. I think that is it for today's call. The final remark that I'd like to make is that the face-to-face meeting that we plan to have is going to be in Paris, according to confirmation by the meetings team. And it's now 1 minute to the top of the hour, and I'd like to give the opportunity to my co-chairs to add to that. Although, sorry, I've seen two hands from Cavus and Roloff. Can I please ask you to keep it to the briefest possible statements that you can make, given that we've already talked for 3 hours? Cavus.
Brief, yeah. Stress test number 18, we should look at that one in a purely neutral and impartial manner, and the presenter should not push for their points. And that is something that we raised. Unfortunately, we were not given the chance, but now we have so many comments and we have to look at that again. Second, with the face-to-face meeting, unfortunately, 1 day of that meeting is conflict with the ICG meeting. I don't know what we can do about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Roloff?
Thanks, Thomas. Roloff Meyer for the record. Thomas, I don't know if you intended a chronological order in your actions 1 and 2 for the working parties, but if you did, I would suggest the opposite order, because to me it would be seem more logic that first we see if comments are in agreement, if we have consensus or else, so we classify everything in that way, and then we make draft reactions to the comments.
Thanks very much, Roloff. I suggest we take this point offline to discuss with the co-chairs, with the rapporteurs, to also hear their views on the approach. But your point does make sense. Unless there are further remarks from your side, I'd like to hear whether my fellow co-chairs have any other remarks to make. So this is the last opportunity. Mathieu, your hand is up, please.
Thanks, Thomas. I think this is just a remark that I'm actually amazed we've covered so much ground in this call, and it was a long call, and it was painful at times. I hope you share the overall impression that the path we're following is supported by the comments we've received so far. There's a lot of work to be done on implementation, and we have multiple challenges ahead of us. But I come out of this call, and that's my personal feeling, is very much supported in terms of we're going in the right direction. The community is with us on many of the fundamental requirements, and there's a need to be very careful to be in listening mode to the input we're receiving. Before Buenos Aires, where we should certainly clarify when there's confusion, but also seek to further understand the concerns that we're receiving when we're receiving concerns. So it's very useful that we've had this call, and I really want to thank all of you for participating in today. Thank you.
Thanks, Mathieu. Sebastian?
Yes, thank you very much. As we are entering into a new phase of this work, I would like to be sure that every co-chair and the rapporteur are still willing to do the job. I think it's important as a matter of procedure to have some points of control about the availability and engagement of our leaders. And thank you for the hard job, anyhow.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. We will take that as an action item for our debrief, which includes both co-chairs as well as rapporteurs. And Mathieu has already done a sterling job in sending out this positive message, which I otherwise would have communicated to you. So that leaves me with thanking you for a very constructive, very long call. And we're going to hear and read from each other very soon. Thank you, and goodbye. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon.
Goodbye, all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.